Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. We will take your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation using hashtag GiantsChat on Twitter. And we want to remind you, fans, that you don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. So we will get to your
phone
calls.
How are you doing on that, by the way?
How am I doing in terms of this?
Yeah, well,
Jeff
Feagles
is the one that
on your daily
plays this as consistently as possible.
You don't?
No, I do not play this.
Really?
Every single day. So I don't have any record to throw out there.
Okay.
Well, how are you doing? I'm assuming you play?
I play, but I'm not allowed to play for money.
So I play in the free.
I play in the free. I actually enjoy the head to head more than I enjoy the tournament play. So I'm doing well. And if I could play for money, I'd probably actually buy some nice shoes each week.
There you go.
But I love it. I love daily fantasy. I really do. I think it's awesome. So.
Absolutely. Well, listen, it's another way to remain invested in the game. But we'll focus on the New York Giants for the next 60 minutes. We'll go over the first half of the season, essentially, since there's not going to be a program on Thursday and Friday. This will be the last show for the week. We'll be ready to go up and running again on Monday. But we will review what has happened over the first 10 games of the season. A lot of chatter in terms of the coaching staff that spoke earlier this week. Jerry Reese spoke, Tom Coughlin, and the Giants made a transaction yesterday, and they brought back a familiar name, Hakeem Nicks, as Victor Cruz is done for the season. He has to undergo surgery for his calf, so that means that they've added some more depth at that receiver position, and Hakeem Nicks had his first stint with the Giants. He was a former first-round pick. He was with the Colts last season with Tennessee briefly in camp, but now he will be learning the offense over the next few days, the bye week. He even mentioned that he is not going to be taking this week off, obviously, because he needs to reacclimate himself with his brand-new offense, Anita.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, can't even remember the last time we saw Hakeem Nicks suit up in a Giants uniform and played. So, but, you know, this is, I think, what the positive. Yes, he's going to have to learn a whole new offense. It's going to take some time. But the fact that him and Eli Manning have such great chemistry, you know, I think speaks volumes. And also, keep in mind, Eli Manning is audibling 80% of the time on the offensive line, if not more. I mean, you know, he's getting the plays that are being called in, and then he has the option to run two or three different plays out of that one play that McAdoo is calling in. And so you've got to feel good. And another thing is, you know, Lance, maybe that is the reason why the Giants decided to go with Hakeem Nicks as opposed to other wide receivers that they did bring in and who worked out for them. Because of the chemistry and the communication and knowing one another between Eli Manning and Hakeem Nicks, that I think it's a hefty expectation to think that the first game in, Hakeem's going to know this offense like the back of his hand, but the chemistry and the communication that exists between him and Eli Manning, I think, is a positive and I think will help in the situation, especially as often as Eli is audibling on the line of scrimmage.
I agree. I think the experience certainly is a bonus, but I think big picture perspective, you know, over the last few weeks, especially with Victor Cruz sidelined, the Giants have developed their core in terms of their receiving core. I think Nicks is a security blanket. He's an insurance policy. He'll get his reps, but you know, he's not going to all of a sudden move in front of Dwayne Harris. Dwayne Harris has solidified his role as that complement to Beckham and Randall. Those are the main three. Miles White has had some plays here or there.
Is somebody thinking he would?
No, I'm just talking big picture in terms of putting expectations in check and realizing he's just another guy that's going to be in the mix. But, you know, they have their top three right now. That's not going to change.
Oh, yeah. I don't think anyone should have those unrealistic expectations. Listen, this is a guy that wasn't getting a call. I mean, you know, realistically, I guess this is the question, and we should throw it out there, Lance, is realistically, what are you expecting from Hakeem Nicks moving forward? You know what I mean? I mean, this is an older wide receiver. He's been nicked up. You know, he's had some issues. You know, health-wise, you know, what he spent some time in Indianapolis, really didn't deliver there. So, you know, what realistically, what can you expect from Hakeem Nicks? I don't, you know, hopefully, you know, folks realize, like, you know, Dwayne Harris is the number two in this wide receiving core.
And Nicks could become a specialist within this offense. They could use him on specific downs. The good news is, as you mentioned, he has experience. They've moved him around, whether he's with the Giants, when he's with the Colts. So this is not going to be a young gun that's going to come in and all of a sudden have his eyes wide open. And he has familiarity with not just Eli Manning, but members of this organization. So that at least brings the comfort level to a whole new high. But I think big picture, they're set right now at the receiver situation. It's unfortunate what obviously transpired with Victor Cruz, but I think the benefit is it enabled Dwayne Harris to get additional reps each and every week, and he now has gotten to a point where, you know, you don't just refer to Dwayne Harris as a special teams player anymore. They're more than confident, and I think the numbers reflect that they can throw him out there and he will deliver, whether it be in terms of vertical routes, whether it be short yardage routes. They have moved him around, and he has come through. And I think that's come with time, and it's come with him building comfort. Remember, he didn't have many opportunities with the Dallas Cowboys. He was mostly a special teamer, but the production alone, he has four touchdowns already, Anita. If you go back and look at all of his numbers with Dallas, he only had three during his four-year career there. So in one season alone, not even a season, 10 games we're talking about, he has exceeded expectations and then some in what he was able to produce with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there are a lot of wide receivers out there in the NFL that could produce if given the opportunity to do so. It's a lot of top-notch wide receivers are third or fourth on somebody's wide receiving core depth chart. And so they're not – you need the targets in order to produce. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, he's here. And because of the way that things have kind of – you know, it's unfortunate with what happened with Victor Cruz. But because of what's happened with Victor Cruz, it's given Dwayne Harris an opportunity to do more. Also, this is a Giants team that has to pass the ball a lot. Eli Manning has chucked that ball a lot, so targets have to go around. So I think it's a combination of – you know, him stepping up because unfortunately Victor Cruz could not get on the football field. And also, this is an offense that throws the ball a lot. So Dwayne Harris is getting those targets, and you need to get those targets in order to do something with them. So, and I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled that Dwayne Harris is here. You know, I like the addition. I like what I've seen from him the past 3 or 4 weeks. He's really delivered.
Absolutely. His numbers are consistent. I'm bringing up the season totals. 25 receptions on 40 targets, 304 yards, 4 touchdowns. He's second on the team in receiving touchdowns. He's in the top 5 in terms of receptions, and he is in the top 4 in receiving yards. And I think most people, when he was brought in, you know, everybody thought Dwayne Harris is going to bolster the special teams. He's going to be the kickoff returner. He's going to be the punt returner. He's going to be great on coverage. And that was his MO coming out of Dallas. But as a result of injuries, it turned in to be a very good investment, because now he has had to have his number called upon to step up as a receiver. And him and Eli Manning seem to be building their chemistry week in and week out. If you look at his game log, and I think, you know, that Saints game was one of his breakout performances, Anita. If you look at some of his recent games, obviously he came up big again in their most recent game against the Patriots. 7 targets in that Saints game. He had 3 catches, 37 yards, but 2 of them were touchdowns. And then you see what he did with the Patriots, 6 catches, 82 yards and a touchdown. He's had 5 catches, 51 yards and a touchdown against Buffalo. He's been involved in the offense going back to, I would say, that Buffalo game. That's the first game where you saw his targets go up from 1 to 6, and then each and every week, 8, 4, 2, 7, 3, 9. You know, he has built somewhat of a rapport with Eli Manning, and that's a player to watch in the final 6 games of the season. Now that we know that Victor Cruz is no longer in the equation, okay, you know, it's Randall, it's Beckham, it's Harris. Those are your 3. We'll see what happens with respect to the health at the tight end position. Obviously, it would be nice to get Larry Donnell back. He's dealing with the neck injury. But those 3 receivers, these are the 3 they're going to have to carry this offense, especially in the passing game, as you referenced.
Yeah, and again, I'm excited. I don't have expectations for Hakeem Nicks right now. I don't. I'm excited to see what he can do. I think he can be a solid contributor as a possession receiver. That's what I think. So I'm intrigued. I'm his biggest champion. I absolutely love Hakeem Nicks. I love him as a player. I love him as a person, and I'm really excited to see what he can do for this team and this organization.
At this point, it's a low risk, high reward type of signing. considering who's out there, and that's what you were referencing earlier, you bring back a guy you're familiar with. If he gives you additional performances that sort of take the offense to a whole new level, that's great. If not, you have your three that you're going to rely on regardless. But as you mentioned, if they could develop a specialty role, if he could be that veteran guy that picks up a first down on a key third down situation, I mean, that's an added bonus at this point. Right now, they need to fill out the roster. Victor Cruz is no longer available. You want to add some depth to that roster. You bring in a wide receiver that clearly worked out with the team. He's a veteran guy. At this point, you get production out of him. I think it's a bonus. If you don't, I don't really think you lose anything in the big picture of things.
Right. I know this team brought in Wes Welker a time or two, and I think that they were impressed with him. But the Rams signed him the week before the news broke with Victor Cruz. Curious. I just asked myself, well, if Wes Welker had not signed with the Rams, would that have been the direction that the Giants go in? But you know what? He's with the Rams. And again, I'm really, really excited to see what Hakeem Nicks can do back here in New York as a Giant.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines, an opportunity to chat about Hakeem Nicks, first half of the season overall, and also looking ahead to the final six games of the season. On paper, the Giants do have the toughest schedule in the NFL moving forward in terms of winning percentage for all of those six opponents combined. Let's start things off with Andrew and Stanhope. Andrew, what's happening?
Speaking of Wayne Harris, I wanted to ask you guys, did the Patriots, I guess it was Amendola, did he cheat on that punt return and do a fake fair catch that they didn't call?
Well, that was his intention. He tried to trick the Giants special teams, and you saw Dwayne Harris and Tom Coughlin, and the audio's posted on Giants.com. They both addressed this. You know, they didn't come out and say that they thought anything was illegal. They just said, hey, you got to be aware when you go up against a player who's a veteran like that, he's going to try to catch you off guard, and that's exactly what happened.
So he didn't put his hand up. If you put your hand up and wave, it's a penalty. But, you know, if you
in terms of faking the fair catch,
you can't run with it if you put your hand up and wave your hand, right?
Correct. Well, that didn't happen. Obviously, the play resumed based on what transpired in the contest.
They're sneaky. They know the Patriots know the rules. But I'm glad Nick, no pun intended, Hakeem Nick, he has many Nicks. He's nicked up. But I like him. He's a good player, and the bye week helps because he and Eli could get on the page a little bit more chemistry, more time to learn the new offense because he's never played in McAdoo's offense. But I think he'll be a good third receiver, a good option. Like you said, the tight end is out, Denell. So, you know, he should contribute a little bit. So it's good news. And you mentioned the schedule. I'm hoping that the Eagles will be out of it by the last game of the season, so that makes that a little bit of an easier game. And even though the Carolina Panthers are undefeated, they might be in a position where they locked up their division and, you know, they're not as motivated. I don't think they'll be totally have everything locked up by the time they play the Giants, but they might be right on the cusp of it where, you know, they just have to win any game.
Well, but they're still going to be fighting for the number one and the number two seat potentially at that point. And no NFL team, Andrew, ever goes into a game thinking, oh, well, we could take it easy because we're in a position. You know, you always want to have an edge. You always want to lock up home field advantage potentially. And if you're the Giants, you're not entering that game thinking, oh, maybe we'll catch a break because of the mentality of the opponent.
Right, and the Eagles games are always great battles. But I just want to say the press conference with Coughlin, I was very disappointed. He said, oh, he's going for the win, and you can't put the Patriots quarterback back out there with just a field goal. But number one, the Giants defense is suspect. They've pretty much failed every time this season in the two-minute drill. So why would you put them out there? You know, I would get the field goal and kill time because it's not Lawrence Taylor and Carl Banks out there. This is a new group of linebackers. Every week there's a different linebacker. Prince is out. There's talent on the defense, but they've never once stopped anyone in the 2 minute. And you're not going to stop a Hall of Fame. You know, if anyone's going to move the ball, it's going to be a Hall of Famer, coach, quarterback combo. So I just think he's not taking into account that his defense is weak. And
well, but Andrew, when you go up against Tom Brady, you have to get seven. You can't settle for three. It doesn't matter whether it's the first quarter. It doesn't matter whether it's the fourth quarter. You always need that touchdown protection. And if you look at the course of that game, remember, they did stop Tom Brady in the red zone. Tremaine McBride had the interception. It wasn't as if New England was getting touchdown after touchdown. Most of their touchdowns came on big plays, which were some mental breakdowns and missed tackles. But when it came into the red zone, the Giants' defense actually held tight and forced them to kick a field goal as opposed to get into the end zone. If you look at how
Plus
that game played out.
Play calling, you could do like a, sorry to interrupt, just want to get this point in. Like, you could do like little dump passes, like check downs to Green and to Darquois, and it's not an automatic that you're not going to get a touchdown, because Coughlin said, well, they had six defensive linemen, so you're not, you know, he's saying that you can only get a touchdown if you throw the ball in the end zone, but that's not true. You could get a touchdown sometimes when they're in a goal line defense or short yardage. You notice the running back, if he breaks through that first line of defense, there's no one there, and they run. It becomes a big play. So it's not an automatic. And a little pass, not to Jennings, but to Darquois or Vereen, and you instruct them to stay in bounds, like Eli stayed in bounds this time, and the clock kept running. You know, Vereen might break one. You know, he might sneak his way in, or they might get close. They might get 5 yards, and they might be on the 2 or 3 yard line. You might be able to smash it in. You know, so the play calling, the combination of the play calling and his logic that you can only score in the end zone, if he went into the coach's meeting, I would have fired him if I was the owner, because there's 3-4 weeks in a row that they did that and it failed. And the previous week they did my strategy and they won the game. So that's all I want to say with that. Last week they did my strategy and they won. When they do his strategy, they lose every single time.
All right, Andrew. Well, appreciate
Eli
the phone call.
Learned, Eli fell down and killed the clock. He made the mistake in the doubt. It just seems like Coughlin doesn't learn. Thanks.
All right, Andrew. Appreciate the phone call. I still have no problem with going for the touchdown at the end of the game. I mean, the bottom line is you got to get that touchdown cushion against Tom Brady, and then all you're asking your defense to do is keep the Patriots out of the end zone.
I don't have a problem with it either. The only thing that I would have liked to have seen is maybe a few more running plays as opposed to passing plays, just so that you know when Tom Brady gets the ball back, he's got less time. Like, I look back at that game and I wonder, okay, if Tom Brady had maybe 20 seconds left or 25 seconds left, less, could they have gotten into field goal range? You know, I mean, they very well could. I mean, listen, it's Tom Brady, it's Gronk, it's Amendola, it's LaFell. I mean, like, the offense is ridiculous. I get it. But I walked away from that game wondering, wow, if we would have run the ball more in that last possession as opposed to passing, where we would have eaten more time off the clock, I wonder if they would have been able to get into field goal range.
I mean, they were moving the football even within the chains and within the boundary lines. I mean, it wasn't as if Brady was throwing every single pass and saying, hey, guy, run out of play. And Tom Coughlin even noted that. So, you know, I don't know. You could speculate all you want. If he had 20 less seconds, would it have put more pressure on him? Absolutely. Would it have made it perhaps a longer field goal? It's possible. But here's the thing, Anita. Landon Collins has an opportunity to seal that game. The dropped interception. That's one play. Then on 4th and 10, the completion that enabled them to continue the drive. So, you know, we could talk all you want about the offense and perhaps you're not capitalizing, but at the same time, the defense had every opportunity in that game too. I see it both ways. I think you can make arguments on offense, you can make arguments on defense, but I don't look at it as one facet or one play call or one possession decided the outcome of that game.
Listen, if Odell Beckham Jr. would have held on to the ball, then that touchdown would have been counted because he did have 2 feet in. It's just because he lost control of the ball. They waved it off. If Landon Collins would have come down, I don't know why he jumped, but if Landon Collins would have come down with that football, with that interception, game over. I mean, listen, you can't go back and say, well, this is the reason why. I will say this, and it's interesting, because after the game I spoke with Paul Dottino, and we all know what a huge fan Paul Dottino is of this team, and he was pretty distraught about the loss. And I said to him, I said, Paul, I said, I'm walking away saying, wow, this Giants team was able to compete with the Patriots. Like, people were expecting, I mean, Patriots were favored by 7. People were expecting this to be a total like no JT Thomas, no Unga. Of course, we know that John Beeson was put on IR. I mean, fantasy football experts alone were thinking that Gronkowski was going to score four touchdowns by himself. Do you know what I mean? Like, just the fact that this team really played with such heart and such grit and deep on both sides of the ball, I walked away from this game. Like, even though the Giants lost, I get it, they lost. Season's not over. They're still number one in the NFC East. But I walked away, like, impressed. I walked away like, wow, man. Giants balled out. They really showed up. They came that close to possibly beating the best team in the NFL. It's a very disappointing loss, and you don't want that going into a bye week. You got a bad taste in your mouth. You know, you definitely want to go into a bye week with a win. But I think there's a lot that the Giants can hang their hats on and be proud about in this game, even though they walked away without a victory. And again, this is just me, and maybe it's me because my expectations going in were, oh, this is not going to be a good one. You know what I mean? So I just so pleasantly surprised and so proud of the way that this team played.
Well, they've been close in just about every game except the Eagles contest. So close games is nothing new. I didn't necessarily learn anything differently from that perspective because all of these games have been competitive this season. I mean, at times we look at this team and they've had injuries, they've had issues, you know, just like everybody else in the league. But all of these games have been small margins.
You can make an argument that right now the Giants should be 9-1.
If the ball bounces a different way.
In my opinion, the only game that they absolutely just lost and, like, it was just not good was the Eagles game.
Yeah.
I mean, the Eagles came out, their game plan was better. They just played better that day. Okay? But other than that, I think you can make a solid argument that this Giants team could be 9-1 right now.
Now, at the same time, and I agree with you, Anita, you could also play devil's advocate here and argue that there were a few games that also went in favor of the Giants that easily could have went the other way, too. I mean, for example, you had a close game with San Francisco on that last drive that obviously won the game for the Giants. That was a battle royale, and even the second Cowboys game, too, was a very close affair until the muff punt. So, you know, that's the nature of the NFL. I guess that's the point I'm making, where there's going to be a lot of close games. Sometimes the ball is going to bounce your way. Sometimes the ball is going to bounce the opposite way. It tends to be like baseball, the law of average, where things even out over the course of the season. So perhaps in the final six games, some of these close games will perhaps go in favor of the Giants more so than what happened in the first half of the season.
Okay, I'm going to share a trend with you. Because this is the first time you and I have been hosting all regular season, right? So, this is something that I've discussed with David Deal before. Okay. So the games that the Giants have lost, okay, the Cowboys with Matt Castle. I'm sorry, the Cowboys with Tony Romo.
Yeah.
Atlanta with Matt Ryan. The Eagles with Sam Bradford. The Saints with Drew Brees. And the Patriots with Tom Brady. Okay?
Star-studded quarterbacks compared to, other games.
Yeah. Right, and the games that the Giants lost, Kirk Cousins, Tyrod Taylor, Colin Kaepernick, Matt Castle, Jameis Winston. So this is the tale of bad quarterbacks, good quarterbacks. Now moving forward, let's look. They're at Washington, bad quarterback. And listen, all due respect to Kirk Cousins. They annihilated the Saints this past week. So, and I owned him in fantasy, so I owe him. I won't call him a bad quarterback, but mediocre quarterback, okay? Jets.
Oh, it'll probably be Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick. Mediocre quarterback. Dolphins, Tannehill. Mediocre quarterback. Carolina, good quarterback. My goodness, Cammy Cam is balling. Vikings, mediocre quarterback. I love Teddy Bridgewater.
He's young.
Mediocre quarterback, I mean their numbers this year is mediocre. The numbers that they're delivering is mediocre. And then the Eagles, depending on, assuming Sam Bradford will be there again. My point is, besides Cam Newton moving forward, the Giants really don't face any quarterbacks that frighten me, with all due respect. They just don't.
However, this is what I would argue, though, and that is a fair trend. Minnesota, though, with Teddy Bridgewater, and you're right, his numbers are nowhere in comparison to the Breezes, the Bradys of the world, but I think Bridgewater's got a much better defense than any of those other teams
who
don't have star quarterbacks.
That 1-2 punch with Carolina and the Vikings, that's going to be brutal. Not going to lie about
it. Because of where those defenses rank.
Ooh, it's going to be brutal.
And then I can make the same argument with the Jets, Anita. Ryan Fitzpatrick, yes, you don't put him in that star caliber group of quarterbacks. However, the defense, though, is much better than some of these other teams that
we were talking about,
whether it be Washington, San Francisco, and so forth.
You know, believe it or not, the Jets' defense has disappointed me this year. I really thought, you know, and I get it. Everything on paper is one thing, and then once it played out, it's another. I really thought this Jets' defense would be – they're good. Don't get me wrong. They are good. They are a good defense, especially in takeaways. What, they have 4 interceptions last week, right?
They've been up there in terms of takeaways.
So, they are good. I just was expecting them to be great, and they haven't been great yet. And I don't know if that's, you know, Cromartie. I don't know. Wide receivers, also keep a note here, because I did a podcast with Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders yesterday, and slot receivers against the Jets are crushing it this year. Crushing it. So keep that in mind. You know, they even though they have Revis and they've got Cromartie, they are a defense that still can be had in the passing game. So I think that's going to be really key. And I think Dwayne Harris, you talk about Dwayne Harris, I think Dwayne Harris can play a major, major role in this game against the Jets.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How are we doing, Abdul?
Let's make a couple of points. My first thing I want to discuss is the keys to the second half or after the bye I think will help us guarantee a decent chance to get in the playoffs. I think the first thing is that Prince needs to come back and stay healthy. We need him to secure our back end of our defense. Right now we're kind of holding on with tape and mirrors right now. Hosley played a decent game last week, but he's not a starting cornerback. He's a decent bench player, but not a starting cornerback. Two things, we have to commit to the run. By saying that, I was surprised when Coughlin said we couldn't run against their defense to get it in. It kind of took me aback that he admitted that. That's not Giants defense. You know, I understand that this team's strength is passing, but we have to commit to the run. It's getting colder. It's getting to end of the year. It gets windy. It gets cold. We have to be able to get 5 yards when we need it. Maybe bring in Bobby Hart in a jumbo packet. And then also, which I've been saying for weeks, that let's whittle down the rotation for running backs. Let's get it to 3 and commit to the run. I'm not saying make it even run pass because that's not our team, but we have to be able to run the ball somewhat consistently. And number 3, I was kind of mildly excited about Hakeem Nicks. I'd like him to see him become what James Jones did in Green Bay. Not a huge amount of receptions, but key receptions. A couple of big first downs, a couple of touchdowns when the Giants need it. I think he's capable of doing that. I think him and Eli have a history and a chemistry that could allow that to happen. That's my main point. My second point, I think I need to give Jerry Reese some kudos. I've been kind of a harsh critic of him. And, the Giants team does have some holes in it. But I think that's more with the salary cap than what he's done the past 2 years. I think his draft picks and his free agencies the past 2 years have, and also the coaching job, have given me enough belief that these guys deserve to come back next year and that the Giants are in good hands. And believe me, this is 180 from what I said. Oh, sorry, a complete change from what I said at the beginning of the year. I was very harsh. I didn't see any talent on this team. And I said, We still have some issues, but every team does. But if you look at who we've gotten free agency-wise and our draft picks the past 3 years have made this team much more competitive than it has been in the past 3 years. So I think we need to give him his kudos because he gets ripped. I think he gets ripped a lot, and people don't really look at what he's done, so.
Well, Dwayne Harris, we were talking about him earlier.
Yes,
I mean, the fact that he came in and he made an impact, and it's not just a special teams player.
Well, yes.
I think it's just an example of perhaps what a player is capable of doing. And I appreciate the phone call, Abdul. Thanks so much for weighing in. In terms of the running game that Abdul was noting about more balance. They ran 23 times. They threw 44 times against the Patriots. On the season, obviously they've thrown more than they've run. It's going to happen, I think, game by game. I don't think the Giants go into every single game and say, hey, we've got to have a 50-50 balance. It really depends on the defensive matchups and so forth. Would they like to have a little bit more each and every game? Of course. I don't think, though, the rotation's going to end. I still think we're going to see three or four running backs every single contest. I don't see one or two guys perhaps carving out a significant role moving forward in the final six games.
You know, it's an interesting debate to have in regard to, you know, running back by committee. You know, there's just a few teams, just a handful of teams in the NFL, Lance, that you know, that has like that one bell cow. You know what I mean? That is going to get the 25, you know, 28, 30 carries per game. Just doesn't exist anymore. Then, you know, then there's a few out there that have like the two, you know, like Washington with Alfred Morris and Matt Jones. Matt Jones, who really had a phenomenal game last week against the Saints. And then you've got ones that have the three-headed monster. Now you've got a Giants team that you're talking about a four-headed monster. And I'm thrilled about it because I love the way Darkwell runs with the football. I think it's a great move. But here's the negative. There is an ebb and flow to a football game, and if more so than any other position, the running back position has to get into a vibe. They have to get into a flow. They have to, like, get into, like, that feel and, like, It's not one of those things where it's like, okay, like come in for the series and then you're out for the series. And then let's go with Rashad Jennings for the series and then you're out for the series. I think that's detrimental to the success that any one of the running backs can have. So, you know, what I find interesting that, like, for example, Bill Belichick does is he goes into a game and says, okay, we're going to really make LeGarrette, even though they have running back by committee in a big way, especially since Deion Lewis is out now. But what we're going to do is we're going to game plan for LeGarrette Blount this game. We might throw in a little James White. We might throw in a little Brandon Bolden. But this game, we're really going to – and so Blount will get the majority of the snaps and the majority of the carries, knowing that you've got these other two guys on the side, as opposed to rotating each and every series. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I think at times more so than any other position, that's somewhat detrimental because the running backs, the way that they get into a flow and a vibe, and I think they need to be out there. So I'm with you. Like, great, four healthy running backs moving forward. Each of them are different. They bring a different element. That's great. But how are they utilized? And how are they accentuated? And how much of the game plan are they a part of? I'm just not a big believer in rotating each series.
Well, they've noted that Orleans Darkwell, in terms of his yardage per carry, is significant in terms of a difference compared to the rest of the running backs. And Craig Johnson, he addressed the media earlier this week, and he said they probably would have used Darkwell even more earlier this season if it wasn't for some of the injuries that he was dealing with. Once he got healthy, they said, hey, now we can throw more on his plate in addition to special teams. They increased his role, and obviously it paid off because it produced in terms of the running yardage. I think that they'll look to perhaps increase that in the second half of the season, but I just don't see this team moving forward where one guy is going to get 20 carries. I think it's more of, you could see two guys getting maybe 10 apiece, but you're still going to have Andre Williams maybe get his two or three carries a game, and Shane Vereen's going to be heavily involved as a receiver. They're trying to utilize everybody on the roster, and they're trying to keep guys fresh. In terms of just hardcore running, maybe we'll get to a point where Darkwell Jennings become the two significant workhorses, but I find it very hard to believe that somebody's going to emerge and get even maybe 16 to 20 carries a game. I just don't see the math working out that way. And that doesn't mean that it's not good to have somebody, like you noted, to have 16 to 20 carries from a rhythm standpoint. You know, Darkwa seems to be the best fitted guy that can at least absorb 16 to 20 carries a game, and then I put Jennings up there too. You know, Vereen can make up for what he doesn't do on the ground, Anita. He makes up for that as a receiver. So you find ways to get Vereen involved, even if you're not getting him, let's say, 10 carries a game. That's the benefit of Shane Vereen. It's the Darkwas and the Jennings of the world who you want to give them more of a workload because you also want them to gain rhythm possession to possession. I think that's been at least a challenge in the first half of the season, but I don't think things are going to drastically change in the second half of the season other than maybe Darkwood getting a little bit more on his plate as he gets back to fully 100%. Let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. Rick is in Tampa. Rick, what's happening?
Hey, how are you?
Doing well, Rick.
Anita, how are you? Nice to have you back.
Thank you.
Water says, what's up?
So what do you got for us, Rick?
You there?
Yeah. We're here, Rick. What do you have? What's happening? Rick, you there? All right, apparently.
Hello?
Yeah, Rick, I hear you.
So, I know. I think,
seem to have an issue maybe with
the
phone there.
I think this is what's going on. I don't think callers are coming in. We hear you guys. For whatever reason, you cannot hear us. So, so moving forward in regard to the calls, we'll bring you on, ask your question, and then we're going to hang up because that's the only way that the callers can hear us.
I think that's
I think that's what happened with our last call as well, Abdul. I think that's what happened with Abdul as well. So they could not hear us.
Dave, we still have Rick there on the line? No? All right. Well, if you have an opportunity to call back in, we'll try to get you up and running here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. So glad you could join us. We want to remind fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings, fantasy sports free to play. Lance Meadow, Anita Marks with you here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. If you can't get to the phones, you want to chime in on the conversation. We've discussed the addition of Akiem Nicks. We've also reviewed some of the trends that have transpired in the first half of the season. A lot of things certainly up for debate here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's head back to the phone lines. And as we mentioned, once we bring you up, make your point, ask your question, and then certainly Anita and I will reflect on that following the phone call. Nugs is in Minnesota. Nugs, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
Doing well, Nugs.
What I wanted to make my point is this. When I listened to Tom Coughlin's press conference, and he said that, you know, they ran their six big guys out there and blah, blah, blah. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm all for going for the touchdown. I'm all for, you know, getting it to Odell. He had it in his hands. Okay, the game was won. But I'm a fan, so I'm jumping into fan mode right now. If we weren't going to get the touchdown anyways, I would have rather seen us come out with some type of a jumbo package and run the ball. I called in yesterday, and I was talking to Schmelk, and they were talking about, you know, well, our run game wasn't effective. I mean, even if you take out Eli's 10-yard run, we were still averaging 3.5 yards a run. Last time I checked, we were on the 5. Okay. If they run out their six big guys, then we need to run out our jumbo package. You know what I mean? At that point in the game where it's 15 feet for game time, it's not about X's and O's no more. It's about willpower. It's about, are we going to move them off the ball or are they going to move us off the ball? Last time I checked, Vince Wilfork is in Houston, okay? And I would have felt better about running out there with a jumbo package, running it 3 times, even if we didn't get the touchdown, still getting the field goal, and having Tom Brady have maybe 30 less seconds, you know, to get the ball down the field. On top of that, I have a problem with Casillas being out there on 4th down. I mean, I know Jasper Brinkley isn't as good or athletic as a linebacker as Casillas, but at the same point, he would have known that the Patriots are not throwing a 15-yard route here. You know, he would have known that Amendola is going straight to this 10-yard line, and he's going for the 1st down or whatever. And I just think that, you know, when it comes moving forward, I would like to see, you know, even if we came out in that passing formation like we did, where's the quick draw to Vereen? You telling me Sugar Shane can't pick his way through the trash for 2 yards, maybe 3 yards, set up a 2nd and 2, maybe a 3rd and 1, maybe a 3rd and 2. You know, I'm just saying, though. You know, obviously when we're at 3rd and 5, we got to pass the ball. I just think that our coach, he got a little gun shy. I don't know what it is. I mean, we can't let anybody dictate to us what we're going to do when our season is on the line. The Patriots season wasn't on the line right there. The Patriots know they're going to the playoffs. They know they're going to get a top 1 or 2 seed. We could still miss the playoffs if we lose a couple games in the second half. That is not the point where we need to let the other team come into our home and dictate to us. We should have been running our jumbo package out there. And I disagree with you guys that Shane Vereen can't be a bell cow back. We're running a spread-type offense. He can run those little draws and, you know, catch little passes that count as basically de facto running yards. You see what I'm saying? I would like to see if anybody's going to get into the flow of the game. I've never liked the Jennings pick. I think Andre Williams has potential if we actually get him the ball and Darkwa. We can throw Jennings out with the bathwater, and let's just ride Shane Vereen.
Well, so, Nugs, though, you're not going to run a draw. Thanks for taking my call. And appreciate the phone call, Nugs. You're not going to run a draw with Vereen on second and goal from the five, especially when they have six defensive linemen in. So I understand the point about how, yes, he can run draws, and nobody's arguing that, but if we're focusing on the final drive where the Giants are trying to get in the end zone, second and goal at the five, six defensive linemen in, I don't think you're going to run a draw with Vereen under those circumstances. Now, you made the point about how on offense, you don't want the defense dictating what you do on offense. That's what Nugs had said, Anita. But at the same time, you also want to capitalize, because the NFL is strategic just like any other sport. If they present one alignment on defense, then you then counter that by bringing in personnel that you think can take advantage of that lineup. So if they bring in six defensive linemen, it does make sense to spread them out wide and take advantage of not many individuals being in the secondary. I don't have a disagreement with that philosophy to say, hey, if they're clogging up the middle, they're exposing themselves on the back end. Now let's try to spread them out. And it makes sense to then throw into those circumstances.
I understand that, but I have to agree with the caller to some extent, and this is what I said earlier, is that I would have liked to have seen them run the football more, just because at that point in time, you have to look at the clock, you have to see how much time is there, you don't want to give the ball back to Tom Brady. You want to give it back to him with as little time as possible. And if you're passing the ball, and for whatever reason, if it's an incomplete, it stops the clock. So, you know, I would have liked to have seen Eli making his audible more towards a running attack. So what, you get only 1 yard or you only get 2 yards? You're taking time off the clock.
Well, but remember, you're going right to the two-minute warning there. So even if you ran the football, the two-minute warning came after Manning's incomplete pass on second and goal from the five. I understand the clock stops after the incomplete pass.
No, I'm talking...
Even if you run it, though, you're then at the two-minute warning.
So, I'm talking about the last possession.
You're talking about third and goal from the five.
Yeah.
When Manning rolled out and took the sack.
Yeah.
That's the play you're talking about.
Yeah.
Running it on third and goal from the five.
Yeah.
Would have run it.
I'm talking about running the ball more so that you can eat more time off the clock. If you go that last possession, if you call up the plays.
I got it up right now. These are the plays.
Yeah, I mean, look at the differential in the passing plays compared to the running plays and those that stop the clock.
Well, the ones that happen before they get into the red zone, I have no problem because they move the football. I mean, they march down the field. Mission accomplished. Starting with first and goal at the five, there's 2:06 left. So he throws to Beckham in the end zone. It wasn't a touchdown. But if he catches that, the narrative completely changes. So now 2:01 left, second to go from the five, incomplete pass. You go to the two-minute warning. So my point is you run it on second to go from the five. You're going to, yes, bring the clock down below the two-minute warning. The clock is still stopping, though, because of the two-minute warning.
I understand.
So we're talking about a difference of maybe 3 to 4 seconds there. Then you get to third and goal from the five. Okay, so instead of a minute 56, maybe it's a minute 53, a minute 52, let's say hypothetically. New England still has its third timeout to use after that third and goal play. So if you choose to run it, personally, I would never run it on third and goal from the five because it's a low percentage play. But let's say you decide to run it. They're still going to call the timeout if you don't get in. There's going to be still about a minute 45, a minute 44 left on the clock, and you're going to have to take the field goal anyway. So I still don't see when you run it how that all of a sudden changes the clock differential so much on that final drive.
They lose a timeout?
Who, New England?
Yeah.
Well, New England, though, was probably going to monopolize all of its timeouts on that last drive to begin with because they wanted to save themselves as much time for that final drive.
Exactly. So do whatever you can to remove that much time.
Well, but my point is,
if you run it,
even if you run it, they still had timeouts and the two-minute warning available to stop the clock.
And how do you know they wouldn't have scored on a run?
No, they may have. But I'm saying a third and goal from the five, Anita. You're going to run it on third and goal from the five with six defensive linemen in. Isn't the higher percentage play to get into the end zone to do it through the air?
But it didn't happen. It didn't happen.
I'm talking about just hypothetical football discussion.
But I understand. But you're sitting back and you're saying to yourself, okay, well, what play am I going to run? At least what's the worst of two evils? I mean, high percentage play or not, run the football so you're taking more time off the clock.
And I understand that philosophy, but once again, New England still has its third timeout that they're going to utilize after you run the
exactly.
football.
Exactly. So then Tom Brady won't have that timeout to utilize. I mean, what did it come down to? It came down to 1 second, right? It came down to one second in over a 50-yard field goal for them to win the game.
It came down to 1 second.
Imagine if they had less time and without a timeout.
They still took over, though, with a minute 47, though, keep in mind, New England.
I mean,
they had a lot of time in terms of
I understand,
but
if you would have ran the football, it would have been less. Would have been less time and without a timeout. Let's head back
to the phone lines. No, I understand. Listen, there's multiple sides to the conversation. There's no right or wrong. We're talking about hypotheticals here. It's an interesting debate in terms of when you're trying to manage the clock. Conrad is in Manhattan. Conrad, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Big fan of the show. Anita, I typically agree with you a lot, but this one I'm going to say I disagree, because if you really look at the scenarios and the final drive, even if we ran down the clock, we wouldn't have been able to run down the clock, let's just say, to 30 seconds or anything below that, just because New England had their timeouts. So with that being said, the most we probably would have given them run the clock down to is probably to a minute, maybe 10 seconds or a minute 15. And if you think about our defense have not been able to stop anyone in the crucial moments in the fourth quarter with these last minute or 2 minutes under 2 minutes in the fourth quarter in these games. And it's been a staple of the Giants for a couple of years now. If you think about last year when we played Green Bay, we had 52 seconds on the clock when we gave it back to Aaron Rodgers, and they came down and scored and got the ball to the field goal and make the field goal to win the game. I have no problem with Eli going for that pass instead of the run, because Beckham had the ball in his hand and the corner made a great play. I was at the game. I saw it, and just like everybody else, I thought it was a touchdown, but the corner made a great play. You got to tip your hat off to that guy. And to me, I think the play that should have been had was the Collins interception when he came down. I think he was coming down trying to prevent the fall, and then the ball came out rather than just, you know, settling his feet down and just make the catch. But if you look at that play as well, the receiver had the corner and the safety beat. Tom Brady underthrew the ball. So I think there's a lot of things that we could look at this game. As a Giant fan, I came out saying, okay, you know what? I love the way they played. It's unfortunate that we lost the game. Belichick did a great job when we got to a field goal range to call the timeouts to present this scenario. They did their job. We fell short, and I'm okay with the way the team is playing. I think once we get Prince back, I think JPP is doing great so far. I think he had a sack, but it was taken away on the call. And he really comes in and helps the run defense. But I have no problem with the calls with the play that was called. I think if you look at the history of the game with the Giants, even that game, even this entire season, we have not been able to score on the run once we get to the goal line. Thank you. And hang up and hear your comments.
All right, Conrad. Appreciate the phone call. In terms of a number of points that he brought up, and there were some great defensive plays. I mean, the Tremaine McBride play, you know, to pick off Tom Brady, that was certainly a game changer. If New England gets a field goal there, a touchdown there, that probably changes, you know, the outcome of the contest. It gave the Giants an offensive possession back. So there was some key anticipation plays on behalf of the defense. He mentioned JPP. I think the one thing that you can take away, at least moving forward, Anita, what he has brought to the table to help ignite this pass rush, you know, has been evident over the last two games, and that's something that they're going to want to build on moving forward. Not just the sacks. I'm talking more about the quarterback hits that I think we've seen increase over the last few contests.
Yeah, Yeah, and also I think his presence on the defensive line. I think him being here. I think him being in that locker room. I think him just being around the guys and his work ethic and what he brings to practice and in his leadership. Yeah, I think it's meant a lot, for sure.
And Robert Ayers now being fully healthy, him having opportunities with JPP now back. You know, look for that dynamic, how those two play off of one another moving forward, because Ayers has been banged up in the first half of the season. So that's going to be hopefully a strong point for the Giants. And Marcus Kuhn, who has been talked about a lot dating back to earlier in the season, Robert Nunn, the defensive line coach, this was something that I thought was very interesting when he was addressing the media this week. He said, by far, this was Marcus Kuhn's best performance as a New York Giant this last contest. And it couldn't come at a better timing considering the fact that Jonathan Hankins is now out for the season. But he was very encouraged with what Kuhn was able to bring to the table. They have been rotating guys inside, but Kuhn, Bromley, you know, maybe we'll see a little bit more of Whitlock moving forward. You know, those are going to be the main three inside, with obviously the addition of Colin Jenkins.
We talked about the quarterbacks that the Giants are going to face, right, moving forward. Let's take a look at the running backs. Washington, as I said, you've got a 1-2 punch with Alfred Morris and Matt Jones. Matt Jones really kind of stepping up. I think we're seeing the changing of the guard there in that backfield with Washington Redskins. Chris Ivory with the Jets started really strong this year. And has kind of sizzled out. Not sure if it's an offensive line issue, if he's dealing with a quad issue, or what the deal is. But Chris Ivory not having the season as of late as he started. The Miami Dolphins, now that's pretty interesting. I like what I'm seeing from Lamar Miller ever since that Dan Campbell took over, and they have a bigger commitment to the run. Lamar Miller has been putting up some great numbers. And also they have a rookie. His name is Jay Ajayi. I love that name for some reason. And he was active 2 weeks ago, and they're slowly getting him into the mix. So the Dolphins' backfield eventually is turning into that two-man system with Jay Ajayi now active. Carolina, Jonathan Stewart is there. But also, listen, you're going to – I don't know how you shut down Cam Newton. You got to have somebody shadow him. I don't know if that's Landon Collins. I don't know if that's JT Thomas. Hopefully he's healthy by then. But that's going to be tough. But you got Jonathan Stewart in that backfield. The Minnesota Vikings, you know what time it is with Adrian Peterson. And the Eagles, DeMarco Murray actually has been doing quite well as of late.
And Ryan Matthews, too, they have now.
Yeah. Well, Ryan Matthews got injured this past week. Hopefully he'll be okay. I don't know how significant it is. But so what I'm saying is, all right, so we're looking, and maybe there's – not maybe, but there's one quarterback – in these next few games that I think Giants fans have to be concerned about, and that's Cam Newton. But running back wise, there's some solid running backs that this team is going to have to go up against, and that interior part of the defensive line is really going to have to step up. You're going to have to stop these running backs. A lot of these teams that they're facing, they're a run-first offense. The Jets are a run-first offense. Washington, I think, is kind of middle of the line.
The Vikings, they're
a run first offense, and as much as some people would argue, I think the Eagles are a run first offense to set up a lot of what Chip Kelly likes to do in that spread offense. So the interior of the line is going to have to step up. It's going to be a tough challenge.
All right, a few more minutes left of the program. Let's head back to the phone lines. Want to try to get to everybody at 201-939-4513. Scott is in D.C. Scott, what's happening?
Hey, three quick points. I think one of the two hosts needs to apologize to Len in Maryland, who predicted a 5-5 record at the bye, and one of the two hosts today berated him several weeks ago for making that prediction.
Not me.
Asked him to go through the schedule game by game and justify
his
prediction.
Is this you?
I don't know. I don't remember having a conversation about this with Len, so I don't know who he's talking about.
That's right. Second point is another one of the hosts today said Hakeem Nicks is an old wide receiver. He's 27 years old. That's 2 years younger than Victor Cruz. And if you just Google wide receiver average age, one of the first hits you'll get is a bar graph showing that age 27 is the peak performance for wide receivers in the NFL over the course of a couple of decades. Third point is, look, there's a lot of reasons for the loss. There's a lot of reasons for all the losses this year. But there's a common thread in all the losses, which is leads late in the game, fourth quarter, combined with bad time management, or arguable time management. The goal is to win the game. and that may be by kicking a field goal. That may be by scoring a touchdown. I think when Eli Manning in Super Bowl 2007, told Bradshaw not to score at the end of the game, that was a strategic call. Sure, a touchdown would be great. But sometimes there are other strategic reasons, like leaving a Hall of Fame quarterback less time on the clock to not score a touchdown. Now, last point, Lance, the thing you're ignoring is on first down and goal to go from the five, if they ran it, a timeout, if they didn't score, then a timeout would have had to have been expended on that play, which was not expended on that play with the incomplete pass. Bottom line, they got to run the ball better. They got to be able to close a game out with 4 minutes by getting first downs. And in each of these losses, they haven't been able to do it. Appreciate the time. Have a great day.
All right, Scott. Appreciate the phone call. I want to try to get to a few more here as we're running out of time. James is in Philadelphia. James, what's happening? James, are you there? All right, James seems to...
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah. All right, James, what do you got?
I was just to hit on what he just said. Yeah, they were. I mean, the hindsight is better, but if they would have ran on first down, they would have been able to call a timeout, then run another one, two-minute warning, and try to throw it on third. I can see that. But away from that, that's been talked about. But with Anita's point, with all these good running backs that's coming along in these few games coming up, I think we found something, Brinkley. I think he can really, you know, solidify the middle of that field, hold that, you know, he's a good run stopper. And with Prince being back, we should be in good position. And listening to Paul and them the other day, 4-2 for these next six games, I think that's really doable. And if we can get that, we should have a clear shot to the playoffs, and we all know what Eli does in the playoffs. And that's just the point I wanted to make. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, James. Appreciate the phone call. And The landscape of the NFC, when you look at things right now, you know, most of the divisions, there's a clear front runner. But for the most part, you know, as far as those wild card spots are even concerned, a lot is still up in the air. I mean, look at Green Bay, for example. Packers all of a sudden have lost three in a row. Minnesota's going to play Green Bay this weekend. They could potentially go up two games.
Do you think there'll be a wild card that
Who
comes
knows?
Out of the NFC East?
No, I'm not saying the NFC East. I'm just saying that I think a lot of teams that we thought were going to perhaps run away with things are not necessarily doing that anymore, especially the NFC North, where Green Bay, you know, you figured would have set the tone, and Minnesota now is surging
right.
at the right time.
Right. Minnesota's
and the Packers
too.
Are
but
all
I don't,
of a sudden falling down a little bit.
I don't think there will be a wild
no,
card coming
I think
coming
it's just going to be one
NFC
team
East.
Out
I think,
of the NFC East.
Yeah, the NFC East, I think whoever those four teams, they're kind of like the they're the NFC South of last year, in my opinion. The NFC East is like the NFC South of last year. Like, whoever, you got to win that.
Whoever wins
goes.
Gets in.
There won't be a wild card.
Well, the question's going to be, will it be a representative in terms of at least the remaining wild cards? Will two teams from the NFC West get in? Will two teams from the NFC South get in? And, you know, right now, with Green Bay playing the way it is, you can't necessarily pencil them in. So it's going to be a very tight race. St. Louis has bounced back a little bit. Seattle, you have Green Bay in the conversation, and then Atlanta or Carolina, depending on who wins the division. Clearly right now, it's the Panthers' division to lose based on the fact that they're unbeaten. But that conversation is going to change over the final six games. For the NFC East, it's just whoever could stay atop the standings at this point. Washington's got a lot of divisional games left. The Redskins in a much different position compared to everybody else. Now, Philly, they've got Detroit and Tampa Bay coming up. Mark Sanchez is likely going to be the quarterback for the next 2 weeks because Sam Bradford is banged up. And Dallas essentially would have to go 6-1 in the final seven games to even make it point of contention.
What's their schedule?
The Cowboys you're talking about?
Yeah, just out of curiosity.
Dallas has Miami this weekend, then they've got the Thanksgiving game against the Carolina Panthers. And then after that, it's at Washington. They have two games against Washington, Green Bay on the road, home against the Jets, and then they're at Buffalo. That's their remaining schedule. It's not an easy schedule for them. Got a lot of tough opponents.
Just like the Giants. Carolina.
Correct, yeah.
Carolina is, in my opinion, Carolina is that ugly elephant in the room.
All right, let's try to squeeze in one more call here. Charlie is in Portland. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance.
How we doing, Charlie?
Hey, Lance. you, I guess I can't, you know, you can't hear me. Well, let me say this. You can't hear me. I can't hear you. You can only hear me. That is called a perfect show. So I agree. Nick should have been signed a long time ago. Also, hey, Steve from D.C., OG Steve from D.C. brought up a good point. When we went to kick that field goal on third down, we could have taken the delay of game, and that would have run more time off the clock, and it would have just, you know, pushed us back 5 yards. It still would have been an easy field goal for him to take. So it would have probably got us down to about 45, you know, we would have ate up 45 seconds. So, you know, that would have been a good thing to do. I'm glad Nix is back. And one thing is, we should not say fourth quarter anymore. All we should say is, you know, that's no longer in our vocabulary, fourth quarter. We can call it quarter 3.5, quarter 3-point plus. But let's not use that term any longer, fourth quarter. I think that might work better for us. So that's all I got, Lance. I know you guys got to run. Thanks.
All right, Charlie. Wow, short, sweet, and to the point. That is a very rare occurrence for Charlie in Portland.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it is. Usually he's a lot more talkative and has a boatload of ideas. Apparently he was very concise today. We certainly appreciate that, given that we are working with the clock.
You haven't really read a lot of tweets today.
We can check out Twitter before we wrap things up. Absolutely. We'll take a look at who's been chiming in via the internet in terms of, obviously, the first half of the season as well as the last game against the New England Patriots in terms of tweets that jump out. I don't know if you're monitoring as well, Anita. I'm just looking through here to throw out. A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 3. Giants should have run the ball on first and goal. At least try instead of a throw to Beckham. But there was no problem with the throw to Beckham. The throw was fine. It was just a matter of not being able to secure the touchdown. So once again, we could play 20-20 hindsight. They could have run the ball. Maybe it would have milked the clock. But let's not shy away from the fact that the play call was fine. It was just a matter of not being able to secure the football. So, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with that sentiment if they would have run on first and goal. The play call was fine on first and goal. It's just a matter of not being able to secure the football to get the touchdown. Donald at Tag Rocket. Moving on, how do we prevent having a letdown after a great game against the Pats, knowing our record against the Skins? Well, you could certainly look back at the archives. Washington has had some key games against the Giants, but in recent history, the Giants have done very well against Washington, specifically last season. They've had the number of Kirk Cousins. I think that bodes very well for them. You know, Kirk Cousins has been performing quite well over the last few games, but I mean, look at what the defense did to Kirk Cousins in the first matchup, Anita. You know, they got him into precarious long third down situations. They had a numerous amount of takeaways. And that's got to be the recipe once again. Take away the run, force Kirk Cousins to win that game.
Also, you had Jordan Reed, who was not 100%, and also no DeSean Jackson that game for them. That concerns me a little bit.
DeSean Jackson was dealing with that hamstring injury dating back to the beginning
of
the season.
Hamstring and shoulder, I think.
Like, so I mean, that's why he missed that contest.
He got pretty beat up. I'd like to end on this. Just a few things that I'd like Giants fans to really kind of marinate in as we get ready. I call this the second half of the season. I know it's really not, because the Giants have really have the late bye. But you know, the four running backs moving forward. What Hakeem Nix will do for this wide receiving core. You know, I think this is a team that needs to focus on better production in the green zone. They're ranked 28th in the NFL. I think that's something that hopefully will continue. You got to commend Eli Manning the season. He's having 21 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. Larry Donnell getting healthy, getting more productivity from the tight ends. Besides Herzlick, actually quite excited that Herzlick played a little tight end last week. Who knows if that trend continues. This is a quick note here as well. The Giants are 7-4 after a bye under Tom Coughlin. So that's a nice trend. That's a nice record to head into that Washington game with. And also, this bye week, I think, is going to help players like Prince, like Pugh, like Richburg, as well as keep in mind, you've got two starting rookies on this team. And that's one of the biggest transitions when you take a college kid and it's his first year in the NFL, they hit that wall. And so for this really break to happen now, I think benefits both Landon Collins and Eric Flowers. So hopefully these 2 weeks they get refreshed and they're ready to really end the season strong, because both of them have done quite well. But that's a really tough hurdle for college kids coming in because they do hit that wall, because the NFL season is nothing like a college season.
Much longer schedule. Plus, let's not forget the fact that they also had 4 preseason games on top of the 10 consecutive regular season games. So it's really been 14 consecutive weeks of football, which is basically your entire college football season, and now you have still 6 games to go. One quick announcement here before we wrap up. The Giants have made a transaction. They've re-signed safety Cooper Taylor to the active roster off the practice squad. He fills the spot created by them waiving linebacker James Morris yesterday, as they brought in Hakeem Nicks as well. So that is a minor transaction there to fill out the 53-man roster as we get set here for the bye week. Enjoy the rest of your week. No programs here on BBKL for Thursday and Friday, but we will be back up and running with a normal week of programming starting on Monday, as the Giants will return from the bye and focus solely on the Washington Redskins as they start the final 6-game stretch of the 2015 season. So once again, enjoy and rest up yourselves over the course of the weekend. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll see you next week right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Good show.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.